Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Joe Humphreys, and he'll be answering your most important questions on nymph, brush, and night fishing for trout. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we are broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Joe a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you won't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address in the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 24 hours after the show ends. If you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Joe Humphreys about nymph, brush, and night fishing for trout. Federation of Fly Fishers needs your support. Its conservation projects at both the national and club level are addressing critical issues of importance to fly fishers. It is involved in the Mangrove Recovery Initiative in Florida, in the Trout of the Desert Southwest Initiative to help the recovery of rare native trout, the Endangered Fisheries Initiative, and is helping to prevent the introduction of harmful aquatic species to new waters with their Clean Angling Pledge. Federation won a National Conservation Award for its efforts. To continue this great work on behalf of all fly fishers, the Federation needs to increase its membership. It needs more concerned anglers willing to join in support of such projects, and by doing so, give something back to the sport that is given so much to each of us. Join the Federation of Fly Fishers today and help support their fine work. And if you're already a member, go ahead and send them a donation. For more information, go to the Federation website at www.fedflyfishers.org. That's www.fedflyfishers.org. Before we introduce Joe, we'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. On our drawing tonight, we'll be giving away a 3-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine. So you have 2 chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered yet for the drawing, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage, which is at askaboutflyfishing.com, and look for the link under Joe's section that says, click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link and fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We will also be giving away a copy of Joe Humphreys' book, Joe Humphreys' Trout Tactics, courtesy of Stackpole Books. If you'd like to find out more about Stackpole Books, you can reach them at www.stackpolebooks.com. That's stackpolebooks.com. Now, here's how you can win Joe's book. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. The question will be about something we talked about during the show, and you must submit your answer along with your name and location using the text box on our homepage. So listen closely and use your best typing skills. Our guest tonight is Joe Humphreys. Joe Humphreys has demonstrated his passion for angling, water, and wildlife throughout his life and career as a fly fisherman. Fortunately for us, Joe enjoys sharing his knowledge and skills, doing so through his works as an educator, author, and conservationist. He has authored 2 highly acclaimed books, Joe Humphreys' Trout Tactics and On the Trout Stream with Joe Humphreys, and many articles in regional and national periodicals. He has also hosted a national broadcasted fly fishing series on ESPN, been featured on 3 fly fishing videos, the Fly Fishing Series, and produced and featured on 4 very well-received videos. Joe Humphreys has taught fly fishing for more than 40 years, including directing Penn State's angling program for 19 years. Some high-profile pupils include former President Jimmy Carter, former Vice President Richard Cheney, and basketball coach Bobby Knight. He currently teaches a weekend fly fishing course at the impressive Yellow Britches Creek at Boiling Springs, Pennsylvania, hosted by Allen Berry Resort, located directly on the creek. Well, Joe, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
It's great to be with you, Roger.
Well, good. I'm glad to have you, and I've been looking forward to this interview. Excuse me, folks, if I pause at moments. I am trying to fight off a cold, and I may have to mute out while I cough.
So, I hope it's not the swine flu, Roger.
No, it better not be. No. So, what we're going to try to cover, and we've got a lot of material to cover tonight, and so many people, again, have sent all kinds of great questions, and we really appreciate that. It's a lot to cover, but and Joe, I know, has a lot to say because he's had a lot of experience in fly fishing over the years. So we'll try to get some of those golden nuggets out of Joe tonight and help us all on the stream and catch more fish. So that's our goal. And what we're going to do is we're going to kind of cover the nymphing aspect, then we're going to go into talk about brush fly fishing, and then into night fishing. So that'll kind of be our agenda for the evening. Okay. Well, a lot of questions came in on flies, Joe. And, of course, we always have our listeners wanting to know what your favorite flies are. Jeff from Chilliwack, British Columbia, asks, what are your three favorite nymphs and how small do you tie them?
Well, Roger, thank you, Jeff, for the question. I would say a stonefly, and the tie I like is the George Harvey stonefly. Has a dark brown back, a yellow underneath tummy. The wings are tied off each side, and a tail. It's flattened, has a lot of movement, and it's been a favorite from Labrador to California. I like it in a number 12 or 10 on a 2X long shank hook. Another is the pheasant tail. That's it's a generic fly, but it works well from coast to coast. It pretty well represents a lot of the mayflies. I would like it anywhere from 14 and 12s and 10s, so 14s, 12s, and 10s, and then the prince nymph. That's standard and works very well throughout the west and the east also. So prince nymph, and I like a prince from 12s to 8s. Not many people think about a prince nymph on an 8, but they do work, and if you don't like whitefish, whitefish has a harder time sucking in a number 8 prince nymph.
Okay, so that keeps the whitefish away, hopefully.
Sometimes it does.
Yeah. A follow-up question to that, CJ in Michigan says, what's the best nymph to use if you don't know what they're feeding on? Now, would it be one of those three nymphs that you would use as a searching pattern?
It would be. CJ, think about this. If you don't know what they're feeding on, is it a freestone stream or a limestone stream? Take a look at the bottom, pick up rocks. Limestone streams, particularly adjacent to springs, always have either crest bugs or freshwater shrimp, scuds. And so, also, think about this. What time of the year is it? Have there been hatches? It might be, let's say it's April, May, early season. There may have been various hatches. You kind of guess, take a look at a hatch chart, and then say, well, okay, no, I don't see anything. There's nothing moving, but maybe abrasive wet flies imitating what has been on might liven them up for you. And also, if it's summertime, you don't see anything moving, but you know there are terrestrials. There are ants. Later on in the summer, there are crickets. And we know that we have inchworms and always caddis. So it might be blind fishing with a tailless humpy or a big deer hair ant on top or even fishing a terrestrial underneath as a nymph. So that's some direction when you don't see them feeding.
Yeah, one of the things you said is, I think, a real good tip, which is, even though you don't see a hatch going on, what would be hatching if there was a hatch going on?
Exactly. What is happening at this time of the year? And it happens every year, basically at the same time, within a few days apart. So, yeah, I've been in that situation, and so I know very well that the hatch has been on. I don't see anything. The fish don't seem to be particularly active. I'll put on a pair of my sulfur nymphs. There have been sulfurs on, I know. We don't see them, but a pair of sulfur nymphs will sometimes give me success.
Well, again, following up on the same question, Gary Nelson in Falls City, Nebraska. He says, what has been your all-time most consistently effective nymph?
Well, one of those if I just had one, I would say the George Harvey stonefly. We have stoneflies from coast to coast. They have stoneflies in Labrador and Quebec. In California, you have stoneflies. So it's, it's kind of a generic thing. It can also imitate, a mayfly. So it's a pretty good one.
Well, and stoneflies have that longer life cycle too, so they're in the water more times of the year, aren't they?
That's true. That's true.
That gives you more options there.
Yes, it surely does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Gary Powell in Memphis, Tennessee asks, Joe, do you ever fish with cream-colored nymphs? The theory touted is that it is the color of nymphs with a softer exterior at transition time.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
Yes, it does. As an example, on the Wind River near Du Bois, Wyoming, working a patch of water, I was not having a lot of success. And gave me a couple of nymphs to try, and they were cream-colored, and I lifted a few rocks, found that the nymphs were going through that transition, and they were of that color. So I tied the nymphs on. I used a pair of them at a time and did very well, and that changed my day. And so, yes, there is that transition time, and same with stoneflies. Sometimes a stonefly, when they shuck their case, when they go through that transition, they can be white, and a white nymph at times you can't understand why you're having so much success with a white nymph. It's going through that that transition.
I've got another question here about flies. Thomas Sipe in Greensburg, Pennsylvania asks. He says, 35 years ago, I had one of the most productive days ever fishing a simple number 16 gray nymph at Pennsylvania's Fisherman Paradise. Is that type of nymph still effective on Spring Creek, and what is the state of the stream now?
Well, Thomas,
this is in your neck of the woods. So
that fly you were using, that 16 gray nymph, Spring Creek has a lot of crest bugs. They are gray in color. They can be anywhere in size from 20s up to 12s as they grow. There are a lot of them in the smaller, if you pick up a rock and look, you'll see some rocks just loaded with, crest bugs. In the size, if you were going to tie a fly, would be, an 18, or a 16. So, that gray nymph that you used probably pretty well imitated that crest bug. And, I think that's probably why you were successful with that fly. And Spring Creek, it's still there. It's doing well, still good water quality, and it's, though it's very hard fished, it's still an excellent stream.
Before we move on to equipment, Joe, is there any kind of general tips you can give to folks out there about, flies or tying them or colors or any,
one thing about
secrets you have?
Yeah, with nymphs. I think movement is important. And one of the things I like to do, when I can, pheasant tails, are more difficult, but with, stoneflies, with, mayfly nymphs, I like to flatten them. When I tie them, I flatten them. And, I use a beading wire. It's a 34 gauge beading wire, and you can get it at Joanne's shop, whatever they call it, and it's a brass wire, and I wrap it up through Palmer or wrap the thread up through the nymph, and then flatten it. And what happens is this: the flattened surface of a nymph, the water across that flattened surface rocks that nymph back and forth. And then on my nymphs, I like to tie the wings out on the side, and that. It's almost like a, it balances it, and it moves it back and forth. And so the water moving the nymph on that flattened surface, moving it back and forth, and those wings make it come alive. It's most effective. And so flattening your nymphs and tying wings out to the side is a tip that it's helped me. It's something that I did relative to seeing the nymphs on the bottom of the rocks, picking them up, dropping them in the water, watching them swim. And I learned that to wait nymphs also, this, when I'm waiting a nymph, wire is fine, but I like a lead foil, and I have several sheets of it, and I don't know where to get that anymore, but I cut a strip and then taper it, and I tie it over, I wrap the lead over a dubbing, so it flattens also, and I like to tie most of the weight, if I can, up into the front one-third of the hook. It makes it ride a little better for me, even though you think that the front one-third, when it's weighted, it would ride head down. It doesn't, and it still rides at an angle head up because of the other materials on the front of the fly. And so it's a very effective way to go. And like I say, when you're tying, some flies with a good fur dubbing, fur pulls the water in. It's and I like the guard hairs; they move. And so some freshwater shrimp, various nymphs of a fur body really makes it come alive also. It makes it translucent sometimes. Caddis pupa, this also. And so, you want to tie as much movement into the fly as you can. One of my favorite statements is, movement kills.
Good. Now, when you're talking initially about winding that beading wire around the nymph and then flattening it out, that kind of takes whatever dubbing you've gotten and then squishes
yes.
it between the yes. wires.
Right. And, you know, it can be, you might have, something up, tied into the tail of the nymph and then, or the base of the, or the bend of the hook, above the bend of the hook and then, any material. So you can pull materials up over the length of the bottom, of the strength of the hook and as it wraps, and then you can wrap the beading wire or you could simply, wrap, fur dubbing in, and it helps to flatten the fur dubbing also. So yeah,
I can kind of, when you were describing that, I can just picture that the nymph almost flying through the water with the aerodynamics you're creating with it. You
know? It really does rock it, yes, and it really it has a great effect, and it's very effective.
Good, good. Well, tell us about what you prefer for rod size and weight for nymphing, and I guess let's just talk about general nymphing, because you're going to talk about brush, and that might be a bit different. But
I like a 9-foot rod, basically, 6-weight line, 5 or 6, and with that line I have good control. And we're talking about the nice thing about the long rod is that. You can keep a lot of line off the water, and you have better line control. Now, we talk about, and I know that some of the questions that will be asked this evening relative to nymphing, and they talk about high sticking. I don't like the term high sticking. It, to me, is kind of a yuppie term, but anyhow, I call it the high fly rod nymphing. And but when you have... It's a very short stroke, and you're driving that nymph in, and the rod stays up, and now, with a longer rod, you can cover, lift, you can keep a lot of that line off the water. You're working basically with the leader, and particularly when you're working pockets and runs, and so, it's very effective. Now, I was in the world championships in different times, Finland, Wales, Italy, Worldwide Open in Ireland. And I remember in Finland, I had a piece of pocket water, and it was very deep. And I could only wade so far. But the big boulders were almost midstream, and it didn't make any difference. If I made a long cast, I still was not going to have line control. I was still not going to be able to fish the slicks and the velocity changes behind those boulders. And thank goodness I took an 11-foot rod along. And that rod helped me immeasurably to keep that line out of the water and gave me time with the nymph on the bottom behind those boulders. And I caught, I think, in that run, 22 fish. So think about this, and this is a kind of a profound statement. Use as long a rod as possible in the conditions you're fishing. And whether it's brush, as long a rod as I can use in a brush. It might be 7.5 foot. It might be only 7 foot. But it's going to be as long as I can possibly use.
Well, that makes, you know, good common sense in my mind, because the further we stay away from the fish, the less chance we have of spooking them. And but yet, like you say, you know, the further away, you tend to give up that line control. So
yeah,
that makes all the sense in the world to me.
And the secret of nymphing, as the secret of dry flies, you want to hold your fly in the productive water as long as you can, and as naturally as you can. And so with the longer rod, you're holding it in those velocity changes, those pockets, those guts, in those areas where the fish hold. You're holding it long enough for those fish to see it, and time enough for it to come to them naturally, and time enough for them to pick it up naturally.
Well, Joe, we need to take a quick break here, but when we come back, I've got a follow-up question on that, and I'd like to explore that a bit more. So when we get back, we'll talk with Joe more about nymph, brush, and night fishing for trout. The Platte River Fly Shop in Casper, Wyoming features a first-class website covering all aspects of fly fishing the tailwaters of the North Platte River, including up-to-date local fishing reports, fly patterns, guide services, and online shopping for top-of-the-line gear for any travel destination. The Platte River Fly Shop provides a professional guide staff for the Blue Ribbon, Trophy, Gray Reef, and Miracle Mile sections of the North Platte River. Visit their extensive website at www.wyotrout.com. That's wyotrout.com. Or call Platte River Fly Shop at 307-237-5997. That's 307-237-5997. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Joe Humphreys about nymph, brush, and night fishing for trout. If you'd like to ask Joe a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com. And use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Well, Joe, before I ask that follow-up question, I wanted to give you a chance to tell us a bit about what's going on in your world, in the fly fishing world. I know you've got some new projects, and you continue to participate in the commercial aspect of training and so forth. So tell us what you're up to.
Well, one of the things I'm doing right now, last Friday, a friend of mine who was an excellent cameraman and has done, Eric Porterfield, who has done most of my filming for me, we went out on a mountain stream, and one of the things I've always felt strongly about is how to work nymphs in the thickets. That meaning that now we're fishing nymphs with weight in a very tight brush. So we had a most successful day. I hung up a few times. I do that on a regular basis. But one thing that pleased me, at age 80, I can still move. And I covered a lot of water. And my casting stroke is still with me. So, and it was most enjoyable. Not long ago, 3 weeks ago, I was in the Sierras in California, and one of the things, I'm filming again a little bit, and John Carey, the gentleman that does the jackets for me, my DVDs. He and I always wanted to go together and fish for goldens in the Sierras. And this was a marvelous trip for me. 5 hours on a horse wasn't too enjoyable, but the golden trout were. And a trophy was a 9-incher, and these were the true goldens. And I don't usually mention the trout stream, but this was the Golden Trout Creek. So, yeah, it was most enjoyable. So, I'm still moving. I'm doing a lot of benefits, and the secret of longevity is keep moving.
But now you're still teaching, right?
And I'm still teaching. I'm teaching at Penn State University. I'm working with the a minority group that I'm teaching casting, and Mark Belden, who has the Penn State fly fishing classes, we work together on this. And these are the kids that from the city that didn't never had a chance to pick up a fly rod or understand anything about the great outdoors, and we give them that opportunity. So that's been most enjoyable because I surely do enjoy working with the youth of this country. And another thing I'm doing right now is I'm working with the youth team. We're getting a group of young lads together. I was helping to train them on the Stillwater River in Montana this year, and now I'll have a chance to work with a group in Pennsylvania. And they are going to go in competition and fish in the senior national championships. They're going to see if they can give the big boys a run for their money. And so it's just a lot of fun. But these kids are from 14 to 18, and they're delightful children.
Great, great. Sounds like fun. Now, you have produced, like we talked about, some books and DVDs currently, and folks can find those on your website, correct? And what's your website address?
That's right. www.joehumphreys.net.
Right.
And there's another website, www.youtube.com. So I have a couple websites.
So yeah, out on YouTube they can probably search your name and find videos.
Now, let me give you some other ideas. Locally here in State College, the Appalachian Outdoor House has a website. That would be www.appoutdoors.com. And you can get to the tapes through Appalachian Outdoor House and Fly Fisher's Paradise. And he has a fax phone, 814-238-3686. So,
great.
And better fly shops across the country. And in the West, in Eugene, Oregon, the Angler's Book Supply, and their phone is 800-260-3869. Or in the East, the Raymond Rumpf Company in Sellersville, Pennsylvania, and their phone is 800-523-6644.
Now that film that you shot, film is a relative.
Yeah,
nowadays.
Right. It's still film with me too. Yeah, right.
But the footage you shot up there on the small mountain creeks in the brush the other day, is that going to become a video?
Yeah, I'm going to work that in. It's going to be Joe Humphreys nymphing too, and so I have one nymphing tape out on the market, and there's some things I felt strongly about, and I think that I needed to do, and that's part of it. Yeah.
Great, great, terrific. Thanks for sharing about what you're up to, and it's great that you're doing so much and still helping people to learn. I think that's fantastic. Follow-up question on what we were talking about. You had mentioned those boulders in the middle of the stream that you were trying to access.
Mm-hmm.
What is, and we're going to go into techniques here in just a minute, but what is the most effective technique to reach those fish behind the boulders? I know it's a constant struggle for many people, fishing it and coming up with nothing. What's the tactic?
One of the things we have to do, and it's not always possible, but we have to position ourselves for the best results. And sometimes we can come in behind the boulders, and if that's coming out wading upstream, and if that's possible, I'd like to, if I'm at a distance, I like to tuck the cast, meaning I'm going to, now this is with weighted nymphs, I like to, you stop the rod high, the casting stroke is a squeeze, and the nymphs drop in at a steep angle. The nymphs then with, as they drop, and what happens is with this cast, as I squeeze, it shocks the cast, and when the nymphs enter the water, they come straight down in, and now you have slack leader, and before the currents can pick up the line, and that gives the nymphs a chance to get down, get the depth that you need, and then you make the cast in a straight line, you stop it high, it drops in, now everything's lined up straight in the water, and now as the nymphs come back to you, you pick up the line, elevate the rod tip, and you have line control from the impetus of the cast to the nymph the whole way through the drift. Now the thing about that, and the reason this works so well and is so effective, is that you're fishing the pocket from the beginning of the pocket the whole way down through the gut. And so now your nymphs are on the bottom for a longer period of time. And if with good line control, you can take fish. I've taken a few hundred. So that's one way. Now,
well, before you go on, I want to clarify a couple of the things that you mentioned.
Okay.
When you're stopping the cast and you're dropping that weighted nymph in, are you talking about dropping it in behind the boulder?
Yeah, in behind the boulder, right.
Okay, not starting out in front and letting it float around.
No, Okay. No.
Now, and the other side, the term you used is squeeze. What do you mean by squeeze?
Yeah, now, your hand is light on the rod. And, so you don't have a firm grip on the rod, and your thumb is on the top of the rod. Now, when you squeeze, you have thumb pressure, and the thumb pressure comes down on the rod. That prevents tailing loop. That prevents your nymph from tangling. Okay, now, when I shock, I kind of, it's a tap. Okay, so I'm squeezing and tapping at the same time. And what that does, that sends the nymphs up and at the extremity of the cast, pulls them down, and then they drop in.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah.
It's a squeezing tap, and that's when you tap. When you make that little tap for the forward cast, it's a squeeze with that tap, and that it absolutely shocks it, and that gives you that extra slack and a leader you need off the cast.
Okay. And then you were going to tell us about another way?
Yeah, and then I'll move up on the pocket, and get up, maybe sometimes in broken water, I can get closer to the pocket at the depth, and I will use what I call a down and upper, meaning that the rod tip stays high. And here again, it's the same thing. I'm driving the cast down with a very, very short casting stroke. It's just a squeeze, but I stop the rod very high, and the nymphs drive in at a steep angle, and hit the water forcefully and slide on in. And so the downer and the upper is I'm driving the nymphs down and the rod stays up. And it doesn't move much past 12 o'clock. And it's an extremely short stroke. It's almost, I love this word, imperceptible. There's not much motion to it. It's just a very short squeeze, and that drives those nymphs in there. And I have line control with the rod high. Now I have a direct contact with nymph from rod tip immediately. So when a fish takes, I'm on top of it.
Okay, thanks. I got a lot of good tips out of that. A couple other questions regarding equipment, basically dealing with leaders.
Yes.
And there were a couple questions, but basically, you know, how do you construct your leaders and what do you use? Are you using fluorocarbon or not? Could you kind of run us through how you set up your nymph rig?
Well, yeah, I come off the fly line, with an ail knot. I don't use loops. And loops give me a lot of problems. I don't like the way they hinge. I won't go into a lot of that because I know everybody uses loops, and if you use loops, that's fine. But I don't because I think they impede the nymphing process. But anyhow, that's just me. I'm an old man. But anyhow, I start off with 17,000. And this was George Harvey's concept. Don't start off with 23,000. Don't. Then you have so many sections, and your leader is so long. So you start off with 17, 15, 13. These are 20-inch sections, 11,000ths, a 20-inch section, and then we go to 2X, 3X, and depending on the depth and clarity of the water, sometimes I don't go much beyond 3X. And if I'm working a pair of nymphs, my tippet, let's say I'll go on to 4X. Let's say I have from 2X, it won't be 20 inches, it'll be 16. 3X will come down to 14 inches. And then 4X, that will be, it can be 30 inches, and this is the reason why. If I'm fishing with two nymphs, and I have them pretty close together, say 20 inches to, apart, and I hook a fish, and that fish starts to churn and twist, I have nothing but a ball of leader, and it's one major mess. If I have my nymphs further apart, 30 inches apart, and by the way, the dropper, I use a nail knot, I use the blood knot for my dropper, and it's 4 inches long. Now, if it's longer than 4 inches, it has a tendency, the dropper has a tendency to wrap around the leader. If it's shorter than 4 inches, like if you have a 2-inch dropper or a 3-inch dropper, trout don't grab anything, they inhale, and they can't suck it in. And sometimes you'll get a quick strike and you can't make a connection because the trout never could get it in. So I found over the years that a 4-inch dropper is just about perfect.
And you're talking about tying that dropper onto the tag of the blood.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You what you do, from when you go to 3X, the 3X, the end of the 3X will be your dropper, and it'll be, and you're gonna tie that onto your 4X with the blood knot. And then, about 30 inches below, then you'll have your tail nymph. And between the two, then I'll put my weights. One problem with weights, and this will be a question I'm sure somebody will ask, but weights have a tendency to slide. And so what I do, I simply tie an overhand knot where I want that weight to be. And the overhand knot will stop the weights from sliding. And then I'll have my weights 2 inches apart. I'll tie another little overhand knot a couple inches up from the other one. And somebody said, well, yeah, but then you're going to have weakness in your leader with the knots. No, you don't. It doesn't make any difference. They don't break off for me. So that's just the way I work it. And so now I have a leader that it might be 9.5 to 10 foot. But I can still control it. Now, the other thing is too, leader-wise, where are you fishing? You want to be able to control your leader. You want to be able to have line and leader control. So I can't take that leader into a thicket. I can't take it into where there's a lot of brush. So here again, you have to adjust. So I had a guy on years ago, I had a guy on the yellow breeches, and he was one of our students, Ed Shank and I, and you know, my friend Ed, we were conducting this class, and I was trying to help this guy catch a fish. And his leader was, he had a 12-foot leader. And I said, sir, you're having problems controlling this, and we were in alongside of a brushy area, and he was hung up half the time, and he was having a major problem. And I said, let me adjust your leader. He said, no, don't touch my leader. He says, a gentleman at a fly shop in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, said, this is the leader you use for the Yellow Breeches stream where you're fishing. So he says, no, don't, I can't change this leader. So after a period of frustration, I grabbed the leader, broke it apart. I thought he was going to cry. I adjusted it to where it was manageable, workable, and his first cast, he caught a trout, which the tears went away, the smiles came. So here again, you have to have, depending on the conditions, you have to have a leader that you can control.
Good, good. So you always tie and construct your own leaders? You never use...
I do, because the company can't tell me exactly what type of water and where I'm going to fish and how I'm going to fish it and what I need. As an example, I'm working a patch of water on Penge Creek. Rather fast, deep and fast, and a friend was fishing with me, and he said to me, he said, there's got to be a fish in that pocket. And I said, yeah, there is, but I'm not reaching him. I'm not giving those nymphs any time down there. So I stopped, broke the leader apart, added a section of 11 thousandths. I think I added maybe 15 inches, adjusted the weights, and it made all the difference in the world. It dropped the nymphs down, gave me more time in the bottom, and I did catch a trout. So you have to know, this is a thinking man's game. And when you're working water, and one thing you have to think about constantly is the depth and the speed of the water you're fishing. How deep do I have to go? How do I get it down there? I have two split shot. I've had so many split shot on a leader, it looks like a rosary. And so it depends on what you have to do. And
yeah.
So that's just part of the game.
And it sounds like that might be the reason, one of the main reasons people don't catch enough fish is not getting down to them.
They don't get down to them, and they don't adjust to get down to them. Now, here's another idea. Many years ago, we're talking about, can I tell stories?
Sure.
Okay, many years ago, this is back in around 1947, I was a senior in high school, a portion of Spring Creek, you could only fish it on one side, and you had to be able to roll cast, and the trout seemed to, because on the other side was a fish hatchery, and there were raceways of trout, and they didn't want anybody over there poaching, so everybody had to stay on the one side of the stream. So roll casting was difficult, and one day, three guys came, and this was the first I ever saw a spinning gear, and they just annihilated those trout with a spinning gear. With the long, thin lines, and they were flying out there with spoons and spinners or whatever they had on. I think they had bait. And that's the first I ever saw a whiz-clicking, a spinning. So I was not enthralled. I was upset. These guys were killing fish after fish. I thought it was a disaster, so I didn't want to go that route, so I found out that if I could use that same line with a fly rod, then I could get down deep and deeper and get the job done. So the way this happened, a family by the name of Kerstetters were on Penge Creek. There was Butch and Les, and these guys were live minnow men, and they took the first spinning line that came out, put it on automatic reels with live minnows, and they were absolutely deadly. Well, they taught me how to fish, these Kerstetter guys taught me how to fish the minnows, but I didn't like bait. And even as a kid, I wanted to get away from bait, so I adopted the monofilament. And so I found out then that I can get down in on Penge Creek and on different streams, I could get down deeper than I ever did before. And so this was a way of life for me. So when I got into deep, fast water, the thin monofilament really got me down and where I could have line control and depth and time on the bottom. But I didn't like the idea of monofilament, because monofilament to me was not fly fishing. But it was the only thing we had. And I was fishing with Tom Johnson up in Pierre Marquette, and I was using the monofilament, and he said, "Wow, that's great stuff." He said, "You're getting down deep, you're getting into steelhead, this is a great game." So anyhow, I went to Cortland Line Company. Leon Chandler and Leon at the time said, "Joe, what you're asking, I don't think we can do." And so I was asking him to give me a fly line of that diameter, like a very thin diameter, but it had to be a fly line. So it didn't happen with Leon, but it did with Tom McCullough, who was a good friend of mine who was at Cortland at the time, and he said, "Joe, I know what you're asking." And he said, "We'll try it." He says, "We have an excellent engineer here," and he says, "I think he can do it." And he did. And so they called it the deep nymph running line. I don't know why they called it that. But anyhow, it's a line with a very thin diameter, 22 thousandths, but it's a fly line finish. And it's been most effective. I've fished all over the world with it. And in the Worldwide Open Championships in Ireland, we were hit with a flood. The Floyd that hit the United States hit the tip of Ireland. The river was running 15 foot high. I rolled the bottom with that deep nymph running line and got enough trout to win the green jacket, winning the first round. So anyhow, I've used this line. Anytime I get into deep, fast moving water, it's been golden for me.
Now, is it a sinking tip line then?
No. The sinking part is the split shot. You put a leader, you use your leader, just like you ordinarily would use a leader on a, you know, it's just a good nymphing leader. And then I add the split shot to it for what depth and speed. And, the thin line, that thin diameter allows me to get down. Where a fly line, the line pushing, the water pushing through the diameter of a fly line pushes your weights, or pushes your nymphs off the bottom. Even then, when you start to add more weight, you add weight, and finally you get on the bottom and you just hang up and it's not going anywhere. So this has been a great innovation, and I think that it's kept me in good stead.
And
on big rivers, I'll fish it down and across and just really fine-tune it and just roll the bottom as it swings the whole way. And I'm covering a lot of water, fishing downstream sometimes with it, and faster runs and deep runs too. And, that's very effective. So, that's an idea. And it's a great way to go.
Great. Well, we need to take a quick break. And, when we come back, we'll talk with Joe, more about brush and night fishing for trout. Front Range Anglers, a full service fly shop located in Boulder, Colorado, provides premium tackle and comprehensive instruction and guide services to fly fishers across the country. In business for over 25 years and with a staff that averages 20 years of experience, they can give you the straight story on gear, places to fish, flies, and techniques. They publish a monthly newsletter that is one of the most informative and insightful electronic magazines in the industry. Find out more about this premier shop by logging onto their website at www.frontrangeanglers.com. That's frontrangeanglers.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Joe Humphreys about nymph, brush, and night fishing for trout. If you'd like to ask Joe a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. Okay, Joe, we're running out of time already.
Good heavens.
But I do want to, there's many more questions about nymphing, and I want to kind of hit some hot ones here, but I'm going to ask you to keep your answers short and sweet on these questions, and then we'll jump into the brush and a little bit about night fishing, okay?
Okay.
All right. A couple questions came in on the Internet about beadhead flies. Do you use them? If so, when?
Yeah, a beadhead is a good fly. The beadhead gives you the weight, and that's the idea behind it, and it has enough flash for color, and Yeah, I don't use them a lot, but sometimes, like a beadhead prince nymph is deadly. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, good. Also, several questions about whether you use strike indicators or not, or do you, instead of a strike indicator, use a dry fly as an indicator?
I do. Yeah, I do not use strike indicators. I use a dry fly, and the trailer comes from the eye, the hook also, and so I have the dry fly tied on to the leader, then and the trailer is, you know, a knot from the eye of the fly, and the trailer is relative to the here again the depth and speed of the water I'm fishing, and so yes. Mm-hmm. Well, incidentally, we're getting into brush fishing, but that the dry fly and a nymph is a good way to fish brush.
Okay.
With a nymph, yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, we have many more questions here we're just not going to get to, and we might have to have you back here to do this again.
Okay.
But, let's jump in then so we can talk about brush fishing. I guess my first question there is, why is brush, you know, what is brush fishing and why is it important to know about?
Well, brush fishing is a game of its own, and the casting techniques and your approach, everything is relative to your surroundings. And the secret of brush fishing is the casting stroke. One of the things that you have to do, you cannot flex the wrist. The wrist, and you're going to use only wrist. The arm has to be out, because if the arm is not out, you're dead in the water. Your casting stroke is so short that, here again, my favorite word with the casting, and particularly in brush, is imperceptible. When I am casting in the brush, my casting stroke is no more than a squeeze. Now, one thing about brush fishing is, and the fact that you don't have a lot of casting freedom. In some of the streams I'm fishing, I have hardly any casting freedom. So there are a lot of techniques. One of the things that I most enjoy is bow and arrow casting. There are times when I can't it's impossible to make a cast. So I use the rod as a bow. And there are various techniques that, and a couple that I feel that I've created. I am 80. I've been working the brush, for 70 years. I started as a kid. And so, in my dry fly DVD, I have my grandson portraying me a day on a mountain stream, which changed my life, and that was relative to casting. But anyhow, with the bow and arrow casting, just remember this. The amount of line you have, okay, is your hand is on the rod, okay, your casting hand, your other hand is right your as in prayer. That's where that hand has to be all the time on a bow and arrow cast. Now your thumb presses on the rod handle, your thumb presses down, but when you're using the bow cast, all right, you're coming with two fingers and then thumb over the line, okay, or leader in this case, you're bringing it back past your ear, and your rod tip is pointing to exactly where you want it to go, and you simply release it in your hand. Now, that's okay for dumping it over the bank, but for distance, take your fly, let it hang down, then make a loop. How long is this cast? Is this a 30-foot cast? All right, make a big loop, make another loop. Now you're getting into your fly line. Make another loop with your fly line. Make another loop. This is a little smaller loop as you progress. Now you have your leader and your line between two fingers. Now your third and long finger comes over and catches the line and sucks it in. There's your power. Just two fingers will not do it. Now, you bring all of those loops back past your ear, and then now your rod is fully loaded, and then simply release it. And you've got a 30-foot shot. Now, another way is the figure eight. You figure eight, the line in your hand. Leave the fly, and never hold a fly in your hand. I've read excerpts in books relative to how you hold the bend of the hook. Never hold a hook. Always have that fly below your hand, maybe 5 to 7 inches. Then you can, as you figure eight the line in your hand, crawl up the line with your end and go right up through the leader, gathering the line in your hand, figure eighting the whole way. It's like a hand and twist motion, as you would on a retrieve. You have the whole cast right in your hand. And I've shot with the same thing, bringing it way past my ear, and I can shoot a 30-foot cast or longer. And so there's so many techniques. If you buy my dry fly and a brush film, I got them all in there, and I got some stuff that I think it's most enjoyable because you fish along with me in that DVD. And and this dry fly show that DVD I have a great mountain run and how to use a bow and arrow roll cast. And how to do all those things. So you're using the rod as a tool. So that's why it's so unique in a brush situation and your approach in a brush. I know people like to fish upstream, and I enjoy it, and I think it's the most effective because fish face upstream and are facing into the water, facing into the current, and that's, you know, how they pick off their food. But it's not always upstream. Sometimes it's in back downstream eddies as the water's coming to them, but they're always facing into the current. But anyhow, your approach, I like an upstream approach, but lots of times you're blocked. So sometimes it is necessary to go off to the side, and what I like to do is shoot distance off the bank. I don't even see the water. I use the bank to hold my line for drag-free drifts, and I can feel the take. Then other times, when I'm completely blocked from either side and in the bottom, I'll fish it on a downstream run, as I did as a child, simply dropping the fly in the water and then kicking out the slack until it gets to the where I want it to go, down through the pool.
Now, when you're fishing brush, you're basically talking about small mountain streams, right?
Yeah, we're talking small mountain fish streams, but yeah, and brush can be not only hemlocks, rhododendron, and laurel. It can be willow thickets, as in the Sierras, or willow thickets, as in Michigan, and swamps, wherever you might go.
Sure.
Yeah,
we're
talking about a lot of foliage in a tight stream, right? Think about this, too. On big rivers, sometimes, where you can't wade, and you have high grass and you have foliage and you have tree limbs and it's a mess and it's too deep to wade. So is that not brush fishing? Yes,
sure.
It is.
And you're trying to get to those fish holding under cover. Right?
Yeah. And you know, in most cases, in smaller streams, fish congregate in the pools, because there's a broader surface feeding area. There's more food in a pool on the surface. It's a greater area of feed. So in the rifts, you'll find them in a rift, sure, if they're deep pocket rifts. But most streams, like now, when the water's low and clear, it's pretty shallow. And so now the fish congregate in the pools, and again, for depth and safety, too. So, yeah, so you're looking for your pools and how to get your fly in the water without spooking a trout, because when the water starts to get low and clear, those trout are spooky. Sometimes I say, if I raise my eyebrows or eyelids, they see it and they're gone. So this is where distance in the brush is very important.
Joe, we've got a couple of questions on equipment here.
Mm-hmm.
Preference for rods, specifically with brush in mind. Let's see, can you suggest...
Put it this way. I said earlier in our show this evening, use as long a rod as you can possibly get away with. Now, a lot of people feel that if they have a 6 foot or a 6.5 foot rod, they have more casting freedom. This is true, but they also have more line on the water. And I want to be able to lift around more currents. I want to be able to lift more line. You're getting into a heavy lip current. You have a 6 foot rod. You make a cast up in there, you can't position yourself, the lip currents grab your line, it streaks the fly down through the pool, the fish are gone. The moral of the story is, if I can get away with a cast with a 7.5 foot rod or a 7 foot rod, even if it's a bow and arrow cast, I can still lift more line over more currents and hold those flies in that area as long as possible and as naturally as I can. And this is how you catch fish. Now, the other part of this is the idea, and I don't know where people are coming from. I don't think, sometimes I don't know whether the manufacturers or the people in this game don't fish. But and remember, here again, I'm an old man, but I've been on this trail for many years, and it goes like this. Use as heavy a line. I go with a 7.5 foot for a 6 weight line, 5 or 6 weight, because I want to load that rod now. When I squeeze that rod handle, that line's traveling. And if it's a lighter line, if you have a 7.5 foot for a 3 weight, what happens is when I squeeze the rod, the line goes, but it doesn't go far. It doesn't go far enough. And then I start to push and I'm trying to get more distance and I end up in the trees. I end up with frustration and, it's not a fun game. So believe me, I've been there. Use as heavy a line as you can get away with, and don't use a weight forward. Weight forward will kill you in the mountains or in the brush. Use a double taper, and go with a 5 or 6 that it will load instantly. As you turn your wrist or as you squeeze that rod handle, it's gone because that line is loading the rod.
Good, good. Okay, a couple things on night fishing. One, why do you like night fishing? Is it worth the effort?
Night fishing is exciting because now you're after trophy trout. You got to realize that big browns and big fish often, their days and nights are turned around. All their feeding is at night. Now think about this, and it's something a lot of people don't think about, but basically the food chain moves at night. There's so much nymphal activity that's hatching at night. Sculpins, they're not daytime movers. They move at night. And so your whole, like I say, your nymphal activity is at night, and big fish can trap other fish easier at night. So big fish are night feeders. That's it. They're nocturnal. Now, what I like in a fly for nighttime fishing, I like, if I'm fishing a dry fly hatch, if I'm fishing a major hatch, And I'm nymphing after dark. It's possible and it's fun.
You'll call it the high fly rod techniques. You're not going to shoot distance. You're going to work the water in front of you. You can get close to trout at night. And so I have a fly line. Reel makes a line that illuminates at night. You put a light on it, and it starts to illuminate, and it's really neat. You can see it. It's like you can't miss it. And just think about this: when nymphing at night, trout are more deliberate. They know they don't hold back. They're on the feed, and so when that line stops, it very well could be a trout. So here again, the downer and the upper, and the high rod techniques. Is a great way to go nymphing at night. Now, when you're after the heavyweights, when you're after fish as long as your leg, on the Fly Fishing America, I lost a fish that we thought might have been a possible world record. And now we're using big flies. Fishing 1/0, 2/0, and bigger. We want two things to happen to that fly. We want that fly to move in the water and move water. It doesn't make a lot of noise. It doesn't make probably any noise, but it moves the water. Like, if I have a big fly on the surface, and I'll strip it like maybe a very short strips, and it will move, it will wiggle and strip, and then it'll move and wiggle on each strip, and it's deadly. And big fish key to that movement. They see. You don't need the noise. They're watching for this is their livelihood. This is they do this to stay alive. The George Harvey night flies. He had a big pair of men. I don't know whether it's illegal now, but tied loon wings and palmer the body heavy. And this is on a big hook also. And so the wings moved. And every time you pulled the fly, the wings would move back and forth. And so I took the Pennsylvania record trout on a fly with George Harvey's night fly. But it did two things. It moved in the water, and it moved water. So, and when I'm fishing big streamers at night, and somebody, I think, asked about flashaboo. Yeah, a little flashaboo, not a lot, but a little, just to highlight, pick up some light underneath. But the fly has to move, and here again, with like a big sculpin, I tie a rabbit strip, then use cross-cut for the head and make a big head for it, and then eyes and a little flash, and then I put a like Ed Shank taught me years ago, put a split shot on its nose and make it come alive, working the bottom. So these are ideas for you, night fishing.
Joe, is there any color preferences? Does color make a difference?
Yeah, I like black. Black, it's a great silhouette at night. They can see, they key in on black better at night. I've taken more big fish on black than anything else. There, I guess, I've experimented, but overall, black is my choice.
Any need for glow-in-the-dark thread, anything like that?
No, I think a little flashaboo might help, but no.
Mainly, it's that movement in the water. And
it is
the water that's the key.
Yeah, it's the movement. It's the movement of the water. You know, when those, like in a night fly, when those big wings are moving, they send vibes out, and fish pick those up in that lateral line. And when that big fly is on top and it's moving water, they feel that. They know that. Okay, so like I say, those big flies move. And they feel that movement. And when they come to an approach to fly, it's alive with the materials tied in, and it's moving. So, yeah, it's a meal.
Is there anything to the moon's phase play any role in?
Yeah. Full moon kills me, yeah. And somebody asked me about not catching. What is there times you don't catch fish? And I was filming with the Fly Fishing America crew, one time, and, we were on the White River, and, we started, right after dark, and, I moved one fish and lost it, and then the moon came up, and I fished till 5 a.m, and fished all night, two cameramen, And a sound person, a girl that they had to work the sound, and the four of us, and my guide, the five of us, was John Wilson at the time. I worked all night long, everything I could possibly think of. Didn't do well. Didn't catch a fish. Didn't have a strike. So yeah, you'll have those nights, but the dark of the moon, because darkness is safety to them. Darkness means it's feeding time.
Do you use any lights while you're fishing headlamps?
Well, yeah, to get around. And when I'm changing flies, yeah, I'll use a light. And, sometimes I'll use a red filter on a light so that it doesn't make that much difference. Or if I don't have a filter at that time, I'll just turn my back to the stream and do what I have to do. And then when I turn around and I'll close both eyes and open one and then open the other, and I'm ready to go.
We had one question about a fly tying book coming out. Are you writing a fly tying book?
No.
Okay.
My God.
Okay. Just had to ask. Well, good. Any other final comments on night fishing?
Well,
tips?
Not really. I think that one of the things you have to have when you're a night fisherman is patience. They can turn on and turn off, so don't be in a hurry. What happens with most people when they night fish, they go out and they fish for an hour or so, and then they get tired, and, well, that's it. And so then they go home, and they say, well, night fishing, I don't see what anybody, why it's so exciting. Well, stay with it. Pack a lunch. Have your hot coffee and sandwiches. Relax and listen to the night sounds. It's glorious in the summertime. Then go to work. And when you take that big one, you'll never forget it.
Well, we had one other request. Chuck Campbell in Buffalo, New York, asked if you could, and I thought we discussed this before about maybe a good way to end the show tonight. You had a good friend, George Harvey. You've mentioned his name numerous times. And if you might tell a story about, a fishing story about the two of you fishing or something that you could share with us that would be interesting. And maybe tell everybody, not everybody knows who George Harvey is, maybe you could tell people who he is.
George Harvey is, as far as I'm concerned, one of the greatest legends of fly fishing ever in this country. And he started the angling program at Penn State University in 1934. And he brought me in because we were fishing friends, and I had his course at Penn State in 1954. And he brought me in. I was teaching in the high school league. He brought me into Penn State in 1970. Then he retired in 72, and George was probably the most complete angler this country's ever seen or ever had. He came up with leader designs. He came up with so many innovative techniques, nymphing, dry fly, the slack leader cast. He was as far as I'm concerned, one of the greatest anglers we've ever had. And so when he wanted to see what kind of a guy I was, he knew me as a kid, but as a man, and he was ready to bring me into the Penn State. We were fishing this day, and we were on a mountain stream, and he says, now, he was older. He was well into his 60s, maybe he was in even 70 at the time. Now he says, I'm going to fish upstream. And he said, you go to the bridge and go above the bridge, and then you fish down to the bridge, and then if you get there before I do, you just wait for me. So I fished a patch of water. I probably fished a quarter of a mile of water, and I fished down to the bridge, and I was leaning on the bridge and watching, and here he comes around the corner, and he fished up to me, and he looked up and smiled, and he said, boy, Joey says, they sure were easy today, weren't they? And I says, well, George, I guess they were for you, but I never caught a legal fish. And he smiled at me and looked, and he says, neither did I. He was waiting for me to say, if I would have said, oh, yeah, they were easy, I'll bet I caught 20 legal fish from 8 inches to 10 inches, he would have said right then, no, Joe. This isn't the man I want. So,
a good test is, for you, huh?
That was the test. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
I always felt one thing that I've always. My father was a man of a great moral character, and that's one thing that he said: be truthful.
Be truthful.
Be truthful. Yeah.
Well, that's a great story to end the show on tonight, and unfortunately, we have to wrap things up here and call it a night, but thanks for sharing that with us. And
Thank you, Roger.
Stick with us here. We got a few more things to take care of, Joe. We're going to be giving away a 3-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers, a 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine, and that book of yours, Joe Humphrey's Trout Tactics, which also covers brush and night fishing in that as well as nymphing. So stay tuned to see if you win. Family Ties, that's T-Y-E-S. Family Ties is an organization which uses a shared interest in fly fishing and fly tying to enhance youth development and family relationships. They utilize resources in schools, communities, and businesses, and they invite your participation. Go to their website, www.familyties.com. That's family, T-Y-E-S.com. Family Ties, where every fish is a trophy and every kid is a hero. Just a quick reminder to everyone before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show that says, what did you think of this show? Just click on that link and leave your comments. Now it's time to give away our prizes. Now the winners of our drawings are randomly selected from our database, and you would have had to have already filled out the form and registered for that database. It's a little late now, but make sure you do it for our next show, because we're always giving away nice memberships and subscriptions like this and other prizes. So we're going to do our first drawing here for the winner of the 3-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. If you'd like to find out more about the Federation, you can go to fedflyfishers.org. It's fedflyfishers.org. Great organization to support, and they support you as well. So our winner there is Gary Powell. Gary Powell. And Gary's in Tennessee. I know Gary. Chat off and on. And Gary, hey, if you probably already have a membership. If you do, we'll get it extended. But congratulations on winning that 3-year membership. Now we'll give away a 1-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine. And the winner, Fly Fusion Magazine, great magazine out of Calgary, Canada. If you want to learn more about them, flyfusionmag.com. That's www.flyfusionmag.com. And our winner for that is J.T. Griffin. J.T. Griffin is in Virginia. And congratulations, JT, on winning that 1-year subscription. I know you'll enjoy it. So now we have to give away Joe's book, Joe Humphrey's Trout Tactics. Now, to win this, you've got to go to our homepage and fill out the form there. Give us the answer to the question that I'm going to ask here in a minute. Let me just clear my queue. And this question, something we discussed tonight, earlier in the evening. And Joe had mentioned that he uses a material that he's not even sure where you can get it anymore, but he used it to weight his nymphs, still uses it to weight his nymphs. What was that material that he used? And if you get this right, you're the first person in, then you'll get a copy of Joe's book. So, Joe, now I'm just waiting for someone to correctly answer that. When somebody does, nope. That's not it, I'm sure. Some people try to anticipate the question and consequently get it wrong. And I think I've got a winner here, Joe. Tom Schultz in Saugus, Massachusetts says lead foil.
Mm-hmm.
Is he correct, Joe?
He is.
He is. Well, hey, and if anybody out there knows where we can get more of this lead foil, please let us know. Joe probably has yards of it over there, but, but the rest
I don't know where to get it. I don't know where to find it anymore.
Summers
used to have sheets of lead, now you get really thin lead with dental X-ray plates. But that's okay for a real lightweight nymph. But stuff that I have is it's a regular lead foil. Mm-hmm.
Well, Tom, congratulations on winning Joe's book. I know you'll learn a lot from it. Just send me your contact information, your address, phone number, email address. You can do it in the same box you answer the question in, or send the information to info@askaboutflyfishing.com. That's info@askaboutflyfishing.com. So, terrific. I'm glad we had some great winners tonight. And Joe, I just want to thank you again for joining us tonight and sharing with us your experience and your tips and tricks about fishing. I sure enjoyed it, and I sure learned a lot tonight.
Well, I enjoyed it too, Roger.
And I'm sure hopefully you'll come back with us, because I think we're going to get a bunch of comments here about we didn't spend enough time on this. So maybe you'll indulge us one more time somewhere down the road here.
I surely would. And
okay,
an hour
great.
And a half went by awfully fast.
Yeah, that's what Ed Chang said. Well, our next broadcast will be on October 7th. At 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. And on that show, we're going to interview Davey Wanton. And our topic for the show will be wet fly techniques for big trout. Davey Wanton has caught a lot of big trout in the past 30 years, and wet fly fishing is in the traditional style is one of the biggest reasons for his success. Listen into our show next week and find out about Davey's techniques and how to master them. We'd like to thank the Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, and Platte River Fly Shop for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-888-961-1115, extension 2. We'll be happy to explain the options available to you. That's 888-961-1115, extension 2. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.